This is 10 Minutes of Science, a Women in Ophthalmology initiative supported by Johnson & Johnson. We have invited ophthalmologists who are leaders in their field to discuss a journal article of their choice. My name is Robin Troutbeck. I'd like to introduce Professor Stephanie Watson. Stephanie is the head of the Corneal Research Group at the Save Sight Institute at the University of Sydney. She is the co-deputy director of industry, innovation and commercialization at Sydney Nano, the head of the corneal unit at Sydney Eye Hospital and chair of Australian Vision Research, which was formerly Ophthalmic Research Institute of Australia. Thanks for coming along today, Stephanie.
No, thanks for the invitation. It's great to be here.
Would you like to start off by telling us the name of your article and why you have chosen it?
The name of the article is Hyperosmolar Eye Drops for Diurnal Corneal Edema in Fuchs Endothelial Dystrophy, a Double-Masked Randomized Controlled Trial. Now, I chose this article because Fuchs corneal dystrophy is something that we see frequently in the corneal clinic. And there's always the question from the junior staff, should I prescribe hyperosmolar eye drops? Or there's a patient that's come in and they've been on them for a while. Should you keep them going? Sometimes the patient even complains that they sting.
Is this the first randomized control trial to look at this?
There has been a previous randomized trial looking at corneal edema, but not in Fuchs. So this is the first randomized controlled trial to look at Fuchs corneal dystrophy and hyperosmolar eye drops. And it's also double masked.
Can you tell us how the authors went about doing the trial?
Well, first of all, they had to find participants that were, you know, a little similar in terms of their Fuchs. You can grade Fuchs dystrophy and there's a modified Kretschmer scale. And they chose patients that had a scale reading of 4, which means that they had guttata but also stromal edema. And these were patients that were due to have DMEC surgery or endothelial surgery. And so they got the patients in the day before their surgery in order to get baseline parameters, but then to give the intervention. They had a hyperosmolar eye drop, which was 5% normal saline, and they administered that to the patients. And then they had a control group that got a vehicle without the hyperosmolar component.
Yeah. And what were the main outcomes they were looking for?
Well, what they were interested in is, like, they thought, look, if these drops are going to do anything, then the time that they'll be most likely to do something is in the morning. Because in Fuchs corneal dystrophy, overnight, you get corneal swelling because your eyelid's closed. And the theory is you can't, therefore, lose the extra fluid from your cornea. So they wanted to see whether the diurnal fluctuation would be reduced by using the eye drops.
So did they measure different outcome measures to look at, such as corneal thickness?
Yeah, so first of all, they looked at sort of baseline corneal thickness, and then they looked at, like, well, what corneal swelling is expected in terms of a diurnal variation, and that was about 20 to 24 microns. And then they said, look, well, if we give the hyperosmolar drops in the treatment group, will this reduce the amount of morning swelling? They also looked at vision and other things that might, or visual acuity, and other things that might impact a patient's functioning, such as backscatter of light and glare. And importantly, they looked at adverse events.
Okay, so what did they find?
What they found is no clinically significant difference between the two groups in the ability of the hyperosmolar drops to reduce the diurnal morning swelling. So both groups had a similar impact of about 10 microns, and this was not statistically or significant. In terms of vision, the hyperosmolar drops did not improve the vision. Some patients actually had worse vision, and there was no improvement in other symptoms such as glare. Now, they did find quite a moderate rate of adverse events. And the primary adverse events was that the patient reported that the drops really stung. And this is something that I have noticed clinically, that, you know, they can sting on instillation, so much so that patients can discontinue them just for that very reason. And this was in their conclusion, something that they really highlighted, that, well, if we think these drops aren't actually doing anything, but they're also causing these adverse events, then we need to think hard about whether they should be used.
One thing that stood out to me in the article is that the patient's corneal thickness at baseline, the average was less than 600 microns. And I wonder if the fact that the patients didn't have any epithelial edema, would you expect that the hypertonic saline would be as effective in these patients anyway?
Well, I think once you get quite marked stromal, enough stromal edema to cause corneal edema, the cornea is really cloudy, and I doubt, well, clinically, it's you don't really see that the drops really can detergest such an edematous cornea. So that's why I also think why they went for this group where there was, you know, some stromal edema, but it wasn't sort of gross stromal edema.
Will you consider not using hypertonic saline now in this group, in this particular group of patients?
Yes, look, certainly I consider not using it. It's costly, it stings, and the clinical benefits are really doubtful. I've published a retrospective case series looking at hypertonic saline eye drops in a mixed cohort. And that cohort, we found that over time in Fuchs dystrophy, there was an improvement in vision and reduction in thickness. But in pseudophakic bullous keratopathy, it made no difference. So I mean, I guess the only thing that this study doesn't really look at is the long-term use of the eye drops.
The fact that they only used them for a few hours prior to their surgery, that may not have been enough. Okay.
Yeah, so we don't really know their long-term effects. So that remains a question. But I think often I see them prescribed in a clinical setting where there is quite marked stromal edema. And it's questionable whether, you know, if the patient is 660, whether that's really making a clinic significant impact on vision. Yeah.
Does it help with pain if they're having bullae? Do you think, is there any advantage for pain relief?
No. Well, I don't know that we have the evidence, but clinically it's not my impression.
Yeah.
I guess what the study, you know, as any randomized controlled trial, we have sort of a very uniform group. If you look at the recruitment, there was 78 participants excluded. So there's quite a number of exclusions because they had other corneal pathology, other issues, and that's fine in the real world. And so with this clinical trial, it was a fairly standard group of patients that went in with a fairly standard protocol, and then the drops prescribed by qualified people to make sure that they went in and looking at very standardized outcomes, and they didn't really include any PROMs. But I guess the takeout from it is, look, we need to not just prescribe these as a knee-jerk reaction when we see corn, particularly given the the potential for adverse events. I think it highlights that we do need more evidence around what happens when we treat patients with these drops.
Yes. And in general, this is a good example of how in medicine we often do things without having real evidence behind it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, when we did our retrospective study a couple of years ago, we went to the literature and tried to find the evidence. What was the evidence that these drops actually work? And there's some animal studies and lab studies, but there wasn't really any good quality clinical evidence for their widespread use. Yet we found in our group that they were being prescribed, or at our site being prescribed to patients with a diverse range of conditions.
Thanks so much for coming along today, Stephanie. I'm sure we will all take that on board, and everyone will be pleased not to have to fill in SAS forms as much as they did in the past.
Yes, that'd be good. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on 10 Minutes of Science. See you next time.